This is Roy with AeroPro Coaching, and we are going to have our first podcast of 2020. This podcast, Dr. Val Valori of IMG Academy, she is a sports psych there, interviews me, goes over a bunch of topics on myself about why I'm an endurance coach, how AeroPro came to be, and just a little bit of backstory about us. So we thought maybe that would be a good topic to start 2020 with for our first podcast. It has been a little while. Lots of changes, lots of stuff going on with our new studio, with coaching, obviously with the pandemic going on. So things are a little crazy, but thought that this would be a great intro to our 2020 podcast season. So I hope you enjoy, and here we are with Dr. Val Valori and myself.
We're live.
All right. So, AeroPro athletes out there, welcome to podcast number. What podcast number is this?
We're going to call it number one for 2020. This will be my first podcast in a while, so we'll just call this number one for 2020.
Number one, and we're doing things a little differently. We are shaking it up and turning the mic onto the coach. So athlete gets to interview coach. My name is Val Valley. I've been coached by Roy for 2 years now. I'm an aqua bike specialist and 2 year national champion. So Roy Foley, man, I'm so excited first of all to have you here. We're at the Hollander Hotel. It's a beautiful evening in downtown St. Pete. And this is where we get to learn about you, like how you've come to become you, your mindset, how you coach, what influences you've had that allow you to see and work with the people the way that you do. So why don't we start maybe kind of present? I know there's been a lot of changes with the coaching business. Tell us a little bit about kind of how things got to be where they are from the beginning to the mid stage and the growth that's happening right now.
Yeah, thanks, Val. I guess I started this back, I would say this started back when I was in corporate America. I was working in a cubicle, and it may even have started before that. I grew up as a wrestler, so I wrestled all through high school and prior to that. And so that's where my athletic background kind of came from. I was small. There was not a lot of other sports. I played a little bit of football, but obviously I'm not a big guy, so I ended up wrestling, and then when I finished wrestling, I went away to college. And then when I finished college, I got a job in corporate America. And then at that point, it's when I found cycling, but I also started coaching. So on the side, I was coaching wrestling. I coached for a high school. I worked with kids. It was fun. I was probably a little hard on them, but I think the cool part is the impact I saw in their life. I would see them outside of school, and they would come up and shake my hand, give me a hug. You never know what, you know, how that's being received when you're coaching people, when you're in that room and you're yelling at them or giving them constructive criticism. But then afterwards, outside of school, outside of the coaching realm, they come up and shake your hand. Just like, I would say 6 months ago, a guy coached, and this is probably 15, 20 years ago, a wrestler, he hit me up on social media, and he was very appreciative of what we did back then. And so I kind of knew, I was like, I kind of like coaching. But I went into corporate America, did my job, had nothing to do with sports or coaching.
What was the job in corporate America? What were you doing?
I did insurance claims. So I was an injury adjuster. So when people got injured, I would handle their injury claims. I would deal with attorneys and work on settlements. So I was in a cubicle, you know, working the normal job. And then I got out of shape, and I decided, you know, I wanted to do something. So I saw some guys riding a bike one day. So I went up to them and I said, hey, what are you guys doing? They said, we're doing triathlon training. I jumped in with them, started training with them. Quick story on that. The first day on a bike with them, I crashed. I went over the handlebars.
Oh.
They left me in the dark. It was like 5 a.m. They left me.
Brutal. And,
yeah, they left me there. Yep, left me on the ground. So I got up. I wasn't injured. And then subsequently, the more we trained, I would get a little better, a little better. Eventually, I was like, I'm going to drop these motherfuckers. And then I did. And then I ended up doing a bunch of triathlons after that. But I was still in corporate America and I was hanging out at a bike shop. In the bike shop, AJ's Bikes and Boards in Brandon. I was hanging out there all the time. Bought my first, I think my second bike, my first tri bike from them. There was a guy there who was working for them and he was part of the ownership of this bike shop. And at one time they said, hey, do you want to come work for us? And I thought they meant part-time as a bike fitter. You know, their bike fitter was leaving. They were getting into this new bike fitting system called Retool. I said, you guys want me to come part-time? And they're like, no, we want you to come full-time. And I said, you know, that's going to be kind of tough. I do pretty well at corporate America financially. And they said, yeah, but you don't like your job. And I said, that's a good point.
How did they know this?
You know, I probably complained about it a little bit. I probably bitched about it like everyone else does. You're living in your cubicle, you know. My boss telling me to, you know, make sure you clock in on time and all that. And,
okay, but backstory, like how claims, adjustment, insurance, like was this something that you always dreamed about doing?
No, I didn't know.
How did you find yourself in this job?
No, my dream job was coach. I wanted to coach and I was going to coach wrestling and be a teacher.
Oh.
But when they told me how much they pay teachers, I said that's not going to work at the time. I had a family and I was like, I can't afford to be, you know, at that time when I was able, before I went to corporate America. So I said, what is a job I can do that is safe, that it will always need to be there? And insurance was that job.
Secure. Yeah.
And so secure, I went to a job fair and ended up getting a job. I was at an insurance company. I worked I was in insurance for about, I want to say somewhere 12 or 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long time.
Oh.
Yeah, so I didn't see Iron Man, right? Like you see the whole Iron Man thing that they do and the backstories. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. And the challenge. And I was like, that's a pretty hard thing to do. And not everybody's doing that. And then I see these guys taking part in it in my neighborhood. And then there was three of us. It was two of them and myself. And then I saw the camaraderie. And every morning we would get up at 4 a.m. We were all in corporate America. They worked their jobs. I worked mine. And we would just beat on each other every morning. I remember the runs and the swimming and the biking. And I was like, ah. And I did my first triathlon. I think that, so I like everybody, I would watch TV. It was Top Gun.
Uh-huh.
After that, I was hooked. And I did... multiple events, like too many, and like most, I burnt myself out of triathlon.
Where was your strength? Where was your area of weakness?
Swimming was easily the weakest part of all of it, and then my strength was the bike. I always did pretty well on the bike, just naturally, and I never really rode growing up. I didn't really ride a bike, so just naturally, the bike was kind of my strength.
Yep. Okay.
So yeah, I ended up. Like the bike shop said, hey, do you want a job? And I said, yeah. Or do you want to? They said, hey, we're getting into this bike fitting. I said, cool. I had to think about it. I couldn't just quit corporate America.
Because you have a family at this time, right?
Yep. Yep. Okay. I had a daughter. I was married. And then, you know, obviously I had to ask the powers that be and say, hey, this is what I kind of want to do. And they kind of knew from my wrestling coaching years that I really loved that. I spent a lot of time with that and mental energy, and I didn't really get paid a lot for that. It wasn't a financial thing.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, go for it. And I was kind of in a position where I could do it at this time. You know, before I was just starting, I couldn't. This time I, you know, were able to maneuver things financially to be able to make it happen. And I did. I ended up giving my 2 weeks notice. And my boss, she thought I was crazy. They thought I was leaving to go to another insurance company. And I said, no, I'm actually, this is what I'm doing. So
you're leaving the security what is in this type of job and going into insecurity. But passion, was that it?
That's correct. So I was leaving the security of, you know, obviously benefits and pay and... you know, that 3% raise they give you every year in corporate America to make you feel good, and 401k and all of that certainty that if you just meet those minimum markers, you'll continue on the path of corporate America. And then eventually, you know, I guess you retire. But that's, it wasn't something I wanted to do. Like, I didn't, it wasn't my motivation. Like, I got paid well. Money wasn't a factor. Benefits weren't a factor. I mean, I went and worked, no offense to the bike shop. They did, they were awesome. Love those people today. But I went and worked for a bike shop. So here I am. I have a degree and all these things. And my parents obviously had different aspirations for me.
Oh, I'm glad you went there. Okay. So what did parents and what did the family think about this shift?
Yeah, my parents thought I was crazy and they thought I was a waste. They said, you wasted your degree. They wasted, you know, you're wasting this career. And then, so yeah, I mean, they were, I'm sure there were worse things said than what they told me. But yeah, at the end of the day,
they just didn't get it.
They didn't get it. Well, my dad's like old school. Yeah. So is my mom, you know, like my mom was a house mom and she did the traditional role. Yeah. My dad worked, worked for corporate. Went up the ladder, you know, did his thing. His dad did that. So that was kind of the norm. But that, like, I kind of always gravitated towards sports and coaching and wanting to help others. And I felt that this was the best way for me to do it. So I ended up becoming a bike fitter.
I feel like there's more of a backstory there, but maybe we'll put that on the side. And so, okay, so bike fitting days. This is such a different world than this kind of punching in like 8 to 5. What's happening there? Like, I mean, you're learning kind of a whole new system. You're working with people in a different way. Mm-hmm. Is that exciting? Is that terrifying? Like, you're bringing home like maybe a quarter of the paycheck that you used to, if even.
That's about right. Yeah, it was terrifying. You know, the first couple weeks obviously were tough because it's a culture shock. You're going into, you know, a very regimented process to, and the bike shop was great, but it's different. It's a totally different environment. And I didn't know what I was doing. Like, it wasn't like, you know, I'm at the top of my field and now I'm at the beginning. I barely know, you know, how to change a tire. I'm newbie. I'm like the new guy who got a bike and they don't. And so now, you know, I'm being thrown into this new thing. So it was really, the first 2 weeks were tough. There was a lot of self-doubt. There was a lot of, like, I made a mistake. Yeah. But one thing that I look back on is a guy told me one thing when I, my training partner, he said, whatever you do, when you make this change, don't look back and always look forward. And I was like, it was pretty profound from someone who knew me but didn't really know me. And I, and so every time I start to kind of look back, I'm like, I stop and I go just straight ahead because, like, in the background, like, what am I going to do? Like, I guess I could go back, right? But then I would end up back in that job and there's no change happening at that point.
Oh, so you're looking to change something.
Yeah, I was looking to change from my corporate job to something different.
Okay, so in this place of insecurity, what's happening now? You're maybe beginning to learn some things. Where does it go from there?
Yeah, so I dive right in. You know, I have a good work ethic. So, like, I would, when we weren't busy with bike fitting, which at the time was kind of slow compared to today standards of bike fitting, but I would go and work on the bikes, or I would go and learn about the bikes, or I go, you know, different parts of the bikes. And then I was getting involved in different aspects of cycling. I was doing mountain biking because it's a big mountain bike shop. I was crashing a lot when I was doing this mountain biking. I was, eventually they sent me off to bike fitting schools. And at that point, I was in Denver at Retool. And a gentleman named Todd Carver, who does the teaching for Retool, I was in a class with him. He was teaching it. Myself and one other. So there's only three people there. Myself, one other, and this other. And the other guy, the shop I was at had acquired a Retool system. And maybe it was the fifth or sixth system in the country at the time. It was beginning of Retool. And I remember when we, at the end of it, I talked to him for probably like 20, 30 minutes about bike fitting and, you know, how I got to where I am today, at that point, which is very beginning. And I said, at the end of the class, I was like, this is very much like coaching. I feel like this is like a coaching session versus anything else. He's like, exactly. He's like, you'll do very well if you treat each session like a coaching session. So that's what I do. And that's when it resonated. I was like, I'm coaching. and that's going to be my new career. So.
So when you say coaching, like, what does that mean to you? Like, do you have, like, your own kind of, like, philosophical orientation about what coaching is, and particularly coaching biking versus and triathlon versus wrestling? Or is it the same? Is coaching really coaching no matter what the sport or what the, context?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great, obviously a great question. I think coaching is coaching. Yes, there's skill-based, right? Like, you're a coach because you know how to, you know, the different nuances of a golf swing, like, because, but I think that if you're a good coach, you're a good coach. So, you know, not very many retool fitters at the time. The other gentleman didn't even have a retool. He was just going to the class. Huh. And so I learned a great deal from Todd, and he showed basically how the whole process of fitting. I think I could coach any sport given the time, just because, not a level of arrogancy, but a level of caring, like, you care so much for this, to see others reach their goals and potential, that you'll do everything it takes to make that happen. So, you know, early on, I would work 24 hours sometimes because I didn't know a lot about bike fitting. So I would do a bike fit and then I would mess it all up. And then I would research and read and read articles or email people and learn about it. And then I would come back and say, hey, I messed your bike fit up. Come back. Let me fix it. Same thing with coaching in the beginning when I was coaching athletes, whether it be wrestling or not. I remember coaching wrestling. Yeah, I wrestled for a long time, but I was in it. Now I'm in the outside, and now I'm teaching it. So then I would watch video and game film of people wrestling and how do I teach that move? How do I relay the message to them so they understand it? Because I think as a coach, the thing is, as you become a better coach, you have a bigger toolbox, and that bigger toolbox allows you to teach different athletes in different ways. Mm-hmm. Like, I've coached rowers, I've coached obviously wrestlers, I've coached swimmers, cyclists, runners. I'm able to do that because am I teaching them technique? No, I don't. Could I? Yes, over time. If you learn that, because if you have a passion for it, you can. But do I know all the nuances like maybe a Phelps would, like, you know, the best swimmers in the world? He could probably break it down to like these little levels of feelings and sensations, but can he coach it? Maybe, maybe not. Not everybody has that ability to coach it just because they can do it. So I just feeling, for me personally, I think that I'm able to relate to athletes. I'm able to kind of pinpoint things that allow me to give them the tools for them to be successful. I was able to do that in wrestling, and then I think I'm doing it fairly well in endurance sports.
Okay. So bike fitting, and what's happening next? How long are you doing bike fitting, and when does that like then lead into getting to this AeroPro?
So I do bike fitting for the first shop. I do that for about a little over a year. And then I'm doing a lot of mountain bike fits. I'm not a great runner. I'm a horrible swimmer. And then I get kind of pulled away by another shop. Another shop kind of recruits me. They offer me more money. And they're more of a road-centric shop. So I was like, well, I need some experience in the different disciplines of cycling. I made the move. It was like like an hour away from my house versus 10 minutes away. So I drive an hour each day there and back.
Okay, so pause for a minute. Yeah. So I'm still thinking about your family who's kind of disgruntled at this, what they think is probably a horrible mistake that you've made, and maybe even like, you know, your wife and daughter at home who are like, what's happened? How are they responding to these changes?
So, you know, that's a good question. So at the time, I think it was better because in corporate, I was working a lot of hours. I was traveling a lot. I was away. And then when I was home, I was stressed, right? Because I hated the job.
Yeah.
So now it's a little more relaxed. You're in a bike shop. It's a bike shop environment. It's not, you know, we're not saving lives. We're, you know, not like we're saving lives in corporate America, but they think you think you are.
But you're also now spending a lot more time at home, and that's a big change up.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So I'm spending time at home. I have a younger daughter. And then my wife at the time was at nursing. So she had finished nursing school and now is nursing. And so she's working a lot of hours, but then, which in turn allowed me to be there for my daughter at the time. So, and then I was racing and things like that. So, I mean, it was definitely a change because I was still putting a lot of work in at my profession, which was new, where the other one was easier because I wasn't learning it. So,
yeah. So when does it become Aero Pro?
So I go to, so I come to this other shop, and then at that other shop, I was introduced to another person, and that, a gentleman who was building a wind tunnel. And I was contacted and said, "Hey, we're building a wind tunnel. Do you want to come and check it out?" I was like, "Yeah, who wouldn't want to come see a wind tunnel?" So I ended up, and I will remember this day because it was like a tropical storm, thunder, lightning. It was insane. So I went out. I was driving through this. I go into this warehouse, and there's a wind tunnel. He put a fixed, it was a fixed wind tunnel, but it was the size of like a trailer. But it was a wind tunnel specifically for cyclists only. And I said, "Holy shit." So he goes, "What do you think about it?" I think it's great. He goes, "Well, I want a bike fitter to run it." Because this gentleman, he went to the wind tunnel in Texas A&M. A person named John Cobb, who did wind tunnel testing for Lance. He went and got tested by this guy, paid all this money. And he's an engineer, mind you. And he goes, he didn't like the experience. He said, for the time and the money and everything, it wasn't of value. And he couldn't hold the position. So, you know, he was in the most aero position, but he couldn't hold it. It wasn't sustainable. So he goes, "What I see is we can do this wind tunnel. We can make it mobile, and we can make it to where athletes can, you know, it's a coaching session." And I was like, "Sounds great. I'm in." So at that point, that was early stages. I'm still working at this other bike shop. Eventually, I get pulled over to work in a performance center where now we're doing like VO2 testing, we're doing lactate threshold testing, we're pricking your fingers. And I meet a guy who's a coach, and he goes, "Hey, you should do coaching." I was like, "I kind of want to get the bike fitting thing down before I become a coach." He's like, "Well, just think about it." And so he just kind of planted the seed. And at that time, I didn't do the coaching. But I was working at the performance center, doing some things, testing and bike fitting and all that. And then the wind tunnel guy comes back into the picture. And when he comes back into the picture, this time he had moved the wind tunnel into a trailer, into this mobile trailer. And he goes, "What do you think?" I go, "This is genius." He goes, "All right, I want you to work for us." And I was like, "All right, I'm in." So now, I'm all in. I'm going to work for this tunnel. And we had a bunch of different models and plans and all of that. But basically, that tunnel ends up, the guy who runs the tunnel, who's doing the wind tunnel testing, is called the Aero Pro. So they coined it the Aero Pro. They had all this literature, the Aero Pro, and all their marketing. And so at this point, early, I was learning how to use it. I was bringing my friends in. I was testing all these people. We probably, you know, 100 different athletes. And then we started going to bike shops. So we went to different bike shops. And at those bike shops, we would do wind tunnel testing. And I would learn a lot. And we would use the retool and the bike fitting. And so we were, you know, I was learning how to, you know, is I don't want to say relatively simple, but knowing bike fitting and then putting that together, you're like, okay, hold your head this way, you know, let's move the bottles. And everybody was, you know, it was always different. You know, there was no consistency for the most part. There were some patterns, but, you know, not everybody was the fastest with this helmet or whatever. So then we took it to some pro camps. We worked at the Hincapie, his development team, and then we did a team in Georgia.
So this is now circa, what, like 2010? Where are we, like, in this
timeline?
So
let's see. Probably 2010. Yeah, it's about right. About 8-9 years ago. Okay. That's about right. And then we came back here, and I think that it wasn't progressing the way he wanted it to. So he ended up kind of shelving the project. I still had access to it for about a year or so. was doing a little bit here and there. But then the coach came back into the picture, and he said, hey, would you think you want to start coaching again? Or do you want to, he goes, do you want to coach? And he brought it up again. And I said, yeah, let's give it a shot. So at this point, I was working still at the performance center. He comes into the picture and he goes, here's two athletes. So he gave me two athletes. There was a male, older guy, and a female who had just had a kid and wanted to get back into, and she was a cyclist. She wanted to do, I think she wanted to do triathlon, but she ended up moving into cycling. And then the gentleman was a cyclist, mountain biker, in his 70s. And then, so I coached those two for a year, maybe a little less. At that point, I was transitioning and doing bike fits with this coach. And I was moving out of my role and doing it basically full time because I was beginning paid hourly at the other place or salary. I was starting to transition from working for someone to working for myself with this coach because I was starting to do bike fitting. I was starting to do coaching. I had two athletes. Those two athletes did really, really well. And then it just kept building and building. And so with that coach, I worked for them for about a year, year and a half. We were doing great. Everything was perfect. Everything was going great. I was working for someone. They were building the business. I got to focus on coaching and bike fitting.
Yeah.
I loved it. I was doing performance testing. I was working for myself. Yeah. So if I did really well, I got a percentage. And,
oh.
And he took care of all the marketing and splitting me off. It was great. From the financials, I didn't have to worry about building a business, which is perfect.
Low risk.
Low risk. I just got to learn. He taught me a lot about coaching.
Okay.
Really talented guy. And unfortunately, things went south in the sense of he had an addiction. And unfortunately, that addiction, he succumbed to that addiction. And I had to part ways. I wanted to stay with that person even after they fumbled in their addiction. And I said, hey, I would do this, but I have to have a little more control because I had a family. This became my sole revenue source. I wasn't working for anyone else. I was working for this company. And I said, hey, I want to help you out. I don't want to just abandon ship. I like what we were doing. Everyone fumbles. If you're willing to, help me have more control, so that way if this goes south again, we don't, it's easier transitioning. And there was a lot of backstory to that I won't get into details because it's about this individual. But
when you say addiction, substance abuse?
Substance abuse.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
So they had substance abuse and I was like, it's just not, and it was bad. It wasn't like, it wasn't just alcohol. It was some other stuff that I was like,
it was impairing his functioning.
It was impairing the business. And,
gotcha.
And it, it could lead to like total destruction of the entire company and everything.
Wow. Okay.
And I said, hey, I want to help you out. I want to keep this growing. Cause I think, and maybe this is a little hiccup, and I think that we could save this. But we had to put, some things in fail safes in place. So that way there were no major issues. And
so you were seeing some of the signs and kind of thinking, I need an exit plan or I need to kind of...
I was thinking that it would be like, if this person ended up having to go to a rehab and all of that we can continue to function the business.
Okay.
And that when they became healthy, then we could reincorporate and move on again. I had no intention of doing my own thing ever. I really liked working with this individual. I thought it was great. It was a good relationship. We were building it. It was all around. It was phenomenal. And then unfortunately it just went to a bad place. And, so then I ended up having to part ways. We parted ways. When I did, I ended up, naming my company AeroPro.
Okay.
And
being the guy in the tunnel.
And my whole thought on that was, I was doing AeroPro before. I was bringing the tunnel in. I was branding it with this other coach, and we were working it together. So it was just a great relationship. And I was like, well, I'm going to call it AeroPro Coaching.
Because AeroPro Coaching is established in what now? 2012.
Okay. That's about right. 7 years. Yep, 7-8 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. Think about it. So at that point, I was like, I'm going to use AeroPro. I'm going to get the branding from this wind tunnel. This wind tunnel is going to go all over the United States. It's phenomenal. Who doesn't like wind tunnel testing? This is going to be a great thing for me, for them. The owner said I could use the name. You know, he goes, build your company, whatever. So now I'm building AeroPro Coaching. I acquire some athletes, obviously, through the separation with the other coach. And now my business is like skyrocketing. I'm like, I'm doing more coaching than bike fitting, and the wind tunnel's kind of just there in the background.
Wait, the wind tunnel's still there?
Yeah, it's still there.
What? Where's the wind tunnel?
Well, not now. Well, yeah, it's not here now, unfortunately. So that was back in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. So then the wind tunnel's still there. At that point, the wind tunnel's still there. I'm building my coaching business, and then I have a separation from my wife, and we end up divorcing. At somewhere around that 2012 period.
So you're starting like a new business and you're ending, something at the same time.
So at that time, divorcing and ending that in a business.
Ooh.
It was crazy. So it was a lot of, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on there. So now I'm starting this new business. It's AeroPro Coaching. I probably had at one point 60 athletes, way too many, but you don't know. There's not like a coaching school to teach you how to do a business. I went to, you know, if you go to school, they teach you how to do this. There's no coaching school. So I'm like, all right, I got 60 athletes. I'm working like 80 hours a week.
At this time, like, how are you doing programs? I mean, was this still like during Training Peaks?
Training Peaks.
It was. Training Peaks was already up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've probably been using Training Peaks, even before I was a coach. So for a long time. Yeah. Okay. And Training Peaks was pretty new. It doesn't have the technology and the things that it has today. Back then we just had Threshold. That's all we're, now we can, I can monitor everything and monitor like all these different variables but back then it was just, how strong can you get athletes, tractor training stress, and you know, hopefully peak. And at that time, yeah, I was customizing the programs. I was giving as much feedback as I could. I was doing more in-person coaching. So in the mornings I would have sessions, and the afternoons and the evenings. So I had a group of athletes, like 20, 30 local. I was getting athletes from Training Peaks. People were finding me. And I could tell the quality wasn't where it needed to be.
Quality of what?
The coaching. The feedback. Some people were left on autopilot. I wasn't giving... I was giving plans. I wasn't coaching. And I was giving a lot of plans, and I wasn't really able to do what you need to do. Even though I was working a lot of hours.
So stop here for a second, because I want to go back to being, or at least what it was like to be a coach for wrestling and being a coach for endurance athletes, which is so different, and so many athletes. You know, we're not like at a gym, we're not on the sidelines watching and participating in every session with our athletes. So how do you do this new model of coaching with endurance athletes who are potentially all over the state, maybe even out of state, and different goals? This is the antithesis of, you know, training, you know, wrestlers.
Right. Well, in wrestling, it's easy, right? Like, you're in a room full of wrestlers, and you get to look them in the eye, and you can tell.
Instant feedback.
You can tell if they're broken or if you need to break them, like push them harder.
Yep.
And you're teaching a technique, and you're teaching, and when every day you're seeing them, and you know if they're too tired, you need to back off, and you need to talk to them, and you can take them aside. You can give them motivation. Looking someone eye to eye is a lot different than talking to them on a voice recording or whatever. So I think that what I've done in coaching is to try to build that type of relationship outside of just Training Peaks. So what I do, and so for people who don't know, is if you're a cyclist or a runner, we write a program, you know, run 3 miles at this at this intensity. You know, we're giving intervals, we're giving little tips inside of the training, but it's all text format. It's all given through software. And so you lose that personal connection. So the thing that I've tried to do as of recent is to build that personal connection with giving information, you know, through social media, where I'm able to put myself out there and they understand who I am. So, because I think it's there's a lot of coaching groups out there where they're giving programs, but you don't know who wrote that program. There's no personal connection. So I try to build a personal connection through social media and things like that, to giving information. Also, I use communication pieces through my coaching, text format, or talking to them using different systems, like voicemail systems. We have private groups.
Which is all stuff you had to learn how to do.
I had to learn how to do that. Like, and I'm still learning. Like, I'm always looking for how to make that personal connection, but never see them ever. I had a guy in China that I coached for 2 years. I had a guy in the Netherlands. I have a gentleman in Australia, which is like a day difference. So, and it's weird because the guy in Australia, it seemed like we had this such a close personal connection, like we met each other. And I think that that's just through the coaching. Like when he does a workout, I'll come back and give feedback. But I'll give like a meaningful thing to him, and it little things that I picked up. So I ask athletes to put their feedback of their workout. So they go into their workout and they put in little things, and I pick up on that. And then when I speak to them, which is through text sometimes, I bring that back into the equation. So it, I don't know, builds that bond or that relationship then, versus like, hey, good workout today. Like, that's good to do, and that you should do that. But maybe add a little bit. Hey, good workout today. I see it was a little hard because your mom passed away 2 weeks ago and you're still grieving. But you know what? Like, think about that as a motivator, that today you get to live life to the fullest, and that your mom is looking down upon you at the goals and things that you're achieving. So like getting personal with them, not just like, hey, good workout. And that's a thing that I think when I had 65 athletes, you can't do. But when I have 30, which is what I do now, 30, 35, I can do.
So is that sort of your sweet spot then?
Somewhere around that, about 30, 35. And, yeah. And you know, I've experimented with a lot of different methods, like 8-week pre-programs, yeah. Which I hate because, like, I get paid less, which I hate, right? 'Cause
sure.
But when you get paid less, you can't give as much,
yeah.
Because you don't have time. Like, there's people paying me more. So you got to give that time. So it's like, I don't do it for money, but also you do it for money, right? Like, there's no more coaching. I go back to corporate America if I don't. So it's that balance of making a living, earning what you're worth, because your time is worth it. You know, my coaching today versus, you know, 12 years ago or 10 years is a lot different. And I think it's better today.
How?
I think, one, I'm able to, like, I can dissect someone's historical, what they've been doing, within like 2 hours, and I can pinpoint exactly what they need to do and give them workouts that apply to them, that are visualized to them, to get their to their goal. So like, I can look at, like, I had an athlete, he's been training for a long time, I looked at his numbers, his data, and then I'm like, this is what you need to do. And I can say it with authority and conviction without any hesitation, even though he's been training for 20 years, I'm going to tell him, this is what you need to do. And then he'll buy into that. And then when they're doing the workouts, then I give that feedback and build that personal relationship. I think I have a more efficient at doing it. I'm better at reading the data, the knowledge. Where, again, I'm never going to see these people sometimes. I may see them once a week. But I'm going to – as soon as I see them, I'm going to – like, I rolled up to a guy today. I did a bike ride with him. I said, hey, Tuesday's workout was pretty good, but you could do this a little bit better. And he probably looked at me like, how in the fucking world does he remember that? And I do, because now I have 30, 35 athletes. Now, I won't remember the bike he rides, and I may not even remember his name, but I'll remember that workout because it's just something that will resonate with me, and I'm like, I want to give him that tip that will get him to the next level. And, you know, I think the greatest thing for me the greatest joy I have is to see people doing things that they just didn't think were possible. And that's kind of my whole underlying thing. Like for you, you know, I'll bring you on, I'll put you on the spot a little bit. Like, I would say 3 or 4 months ago, you're like, I don't think I'm getting to the point where I need to be. And I'm like, just stay with it. We're exactly where we need to be. I said, you're perfect where you need to be. And I think that I have the confidence to be able to tell you, as a high level athlete, as someone whose mental game is probably A compared to most others, not saying you don't falter, we all do, no matter who we are in our profession, but I was confident in that answer to you, and then I knew that we would get to a point where I didn't know you would win, but I knew you would perform at your best, and I have the confidence now to be able to do that. And I think that whether it's in a text format, a voicemail, an email, a phone call, that comes out. I think that comes out in someone who doesn't know what they're doing, or maybe isn't as confident, or is new, and they're learning. Because I was new. When I was new, I got lucky with the first two people. I was like, this is working. Great. So.
Wow. Okay. So neat to hear about this kind of start, mid, and now how it's grown over the last 10 years. And there's a lot more growth that's happening right now. Tell us about what you're doing with this expansion, the new facility. It sounds so cool. I'm not sure that I really understand it.
Me neither. Yeah, I call it AeroPro 2.0. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So I guess part of it is like, so when I left, and I was working out of basically my home, and I would go and do bike fits randomly. I got away from bike fits, not as many, and I wasn't happy with that because I want a bike fit because I love bike fitting. And even to this day, you know, I've done thousands of them. People are like, you don't get bored of it? No, I go, I love it. It's always different. The people are different. Their story's different. I talk to them the whole time, and I build that relationship. So I ended up, I would work in small little offices. I worked in a CrossFit gym for a little bit. Then I worked at a 10 by 10 room. And then I ended up where I'm at today, which is my biggest facility, which is 500 square feet in this old historic building. But it's in a little, you know, urban-y area. Maybe not the best place to be at night. And like, for example, I'll give us a quick story on that. Like, I had a person come and they were waiting, and they were saying, hey, why do you work in a place like this? And I was like, oh, I go, the neighborhood. And it's definitely an urban-y neighborhood. There's a place across the street that has tacos, and there's a barbershop, and you know, definitely probably a place you don't want to be at after night. There's a lot of cops there, but I love it. And then it's a grungy place. And then, but I was like, you know what? I want to get to that next level. I want to be able to showcase what we do. And I want to bring a clubhouse. I want to bring that culture that we have in AeroPro that I think that we've developed, that interpersonal connection. And I want to bring it to a lot more people. And how do I do that? I need a facility. I need a larger facility. And so it's about 1,400 square feet, old historic building. And I remember going there and going, this is the place.
Oh, wow.
Just had the feeling. I looked at other places, had the energy. Yeah. It felt like AeroPro. It felt like the people we work with now. And it felt like a clubhouse. So I contacted the owners. I went back and forth with them to try to work out a lease, and the lease is a lot of money. It's probably double what I pay now. It's really putting me outside that comfort zone that I've been in. But I go, you know what? I left corporate America. This is easy now. So I'm taking the leap, and I'm building it to outside that comfort zone where now it's very affordable. I can afford the rents and the things, and even if the business doesn't do well, I can still, you know, make it happen. With this new place, not so much. It's putting me out there. There's a lot of expenditures and money and stuff.
So please pause, because what has it been about you that, I mean, are you just like high risk and like you're kind of a rebel and you like to be on the edge? Okay, so yeah, are you just like kind of guy who likes live life on the edge, needs to like feel the thrill? What is it about this that like you just taking these big leaps, living on the edge is easy for you?
No, actually, I'm pretty risk adverse. I try to be very calculative before I make a move.
So what were the calculations that led to this big move? Because this is huge.
So, yeah, that's a good question. So I guess the biggest thing is that I think I have a successful product. And so my service is I've been able to get the coaching to where I believe is good to the right number. And then bike fitting, I started to reintroduce that as 50% of my, or almost 60% of my business 3 years ago, reinvested in more technology and really started to distance myself in the bike fitting realm, I thought, from potential competition. Everybody, big word of mouth, I do bike fits all over this area and everyone refers back. I think it's a solid product. So I feel like I have a solid product that the growth is sustainable. And so I think that before I was like still trying to figure the model, trying to figure out how much coaching, how much bike fitting, is there business out there? Is there a want, a need for this? And then I'm like, there is. And I think part of it, and this is something I talk about a lot to people who ask me this question, is and like people see me once, maybe once a year, maybe once every 18 months, and they do the bike fitting and then that's it. There's no reason for them to come back to see me ever again. And so with the clubhouse now, it's they can come back, they can hang out, you know, if I'm not busy they can ask me coaching questions. I'm free giving of all the information because I can tell them everything, but coaching is a lot different than that. It's a hangout. It's like, and I can do rides from there, and afterwards we can sit and talk about whatever. But now, like a lot of times, I'm rushed. Like if I go to a ride now, there's like today I went to a ride and there was like 30, 40 people, and there's a lot of questions, and I get pulled in different directions. But the clubhouse will be a little different, you know. And I have that it's all going to be based around helping athletes. You know, it's helping athletes. Enjoy the bike that they buy, enjoy that power meter that they bought, learn how to use the Zwift that's out there, how to use trainers more effectively. You know, a lot of people go, I hate the trainer. I'm like, well, I hate it too, but it's a very effective tool if used properly, and it'll help you enjoy your riding when you're out there, you know, if you do a trainer twice a week, because it's some people it's either trainer or nothing, and there's nothing less motivating than getting dropped, right? Like, so if you can put an extra workout in on the trainer and you don't get dropped, that's pretty motivating. So teaching them, I think people just don't know how to use it properly to make it a quote unquote fun tool. But you know, like, it's like, so I, you know, I don't, I wouldn't say that I'm a risky person. I try to take risks that are based on the data. Like when I coach somebody, it's always a risk that if I give them these workouts, is it going to work? Because it's 7-8 months or 7-8 weeks before we see the results of that workout. I look at all the numbers and I say, hey, I've been making X amount of money for this amount of years. The growth is in going up. I'm doing more bike fits. Let's take a chance. And so much so that the location is right. It's right in the middle of, you know, a big city. It's right off easy access. It has it's 1400 square foot building. It has old historic brick. It's 100 years old. It has, you know, and I'm doing it by myself. Like there's no outside capital, there's no partner, there's no funding other than the money that I've made to be able to build this. So, you know, I have the retool systems, which are very expensive. I mean, we probably have over $100,000 in equipment there, with, you know, all the trainers and the retools and the equipment. It's expensive, which is good. I've amassed that through the years, so I don't have to buy that. We have a business. So I'm not starting a business. I'm just relocating what I have. We're going to add a little coffee shop. So,
okay, what kind of coffee beans are you going to have?
So there's a
very important.
Yeah, this is so there's a couple options. There's a local roaster called Eastlick, Spatties, who is my favorite coffee shop. They use the bean, and so we're gonna source it there. We may look at other, you know, we may mix it up a little bit. So just like in coaching, I'm gonna try and whatever the right mixture is. So, you know, part of it is, are we gonna have a barista pouring fancy things in the beginning? No, we're not. Because if we sell 5 coffees a week or a day, there's no need for that. We sell 50, maybe there is. So we're gonna start with a cool machine that grinds it, all the beans fresh, pours a really good espresso, and you can do lattes, cappuccinos, things like that. And we'll have pastries that we're going to source from a local I'm not making them, but we're going to source them. So when you show up, you're going to be able to have a latte, you have a pastry. If I'm late on my appointment, which normally I am late, you'll be able to have, or if you just want to pop in, like, at lunchtime, you can pop in. We're going to have rides from there. We'll have Zwift set up on trainers. We'll have 2 to 3 fit stations. We'll have a service area, a little workshop. We'll have a sports psychologist show up who works at IMG Academy, who's probably the best. So that's the other thing, is this building will allow or accommodate for lots of seminars, lots of things to help athletes. And it's going to be a clubhouse, like a real cultural part of what AeroPro is. I'm going to share what I share with my athletes. Probably not to the same degree. It's not going to be as personal, but you're going to get to be part of what we do. And in that, you know, there'll be some memberships and things like that. So you can, you know, you got to have some skin in the game. One thing I've learned in coaching, if it's free, they don't do it. So there's always skin in the game. Even if I sponsor an athlete, I have an athlete, they're paying me some way. I'm getting something out of you. Not because I'm greedy, because so when the people come in, are you going to have to pay to come in? No. But if you're going to take advantage of some of the things that we're doing, there'll be a little, what's it called, AeroPro Club, maybe. I don't know. So
you're bringing more of that interpersonal relationship to coaching.
We're going to try. Yeah, we're going to try to bring...
And community.
I think the big thing is community. And I think that the one thing that we've been able to navigate is to work with bike shops, right? Like, we don't sell bikes. We sell coaching services. We sell fitting. There are bike shops that do fittings. But that's all we do, is bike fittings and coaching. So we work with all the bike shops that we can. Like, we're going to, you know, if a specialized bike is the best fit for someone, we're going to send you to a specialized shop, and we're going to help them pick the right bike. Mm. You know, there's nothing worse for the bike shop itself, and it's not their fault sometimes. They don't have the time. They don't have the resources to have a full-time person. All I do is bike fitting. So... it doesn't mean I'm perfect. We all make mistakes, but I'm going to take the onus on that sizing and the stems and the bars and all that. I'm going to take that, and I'm going to tell the bike shop, this is what they need. Now, you know, I mean, I had a guy the other day. He went and bought a Trek, right? And, you know, they did a great job. It was a great bike. He loves the bike, but he needed 3 different pieces that ended up costing him $1,000. So that experience wasn't as good as it could have been if he could have got that in the back end, like in the front end when he bought the bike. So I think that what we're going to do is we're going to assist bike shops, hopefully, the ones who want to. And we're not a bike shop. That's the thing, people care. Are you building a bike shop? No, there's not going to be bikes there. We're going to be all services. You know, a lot of times people come in, they do a bike fit with us, and they need new bars. We have to send them away. They get annoyed with that. Now we're going to be able to replace those bars. But my first thing is, do you want to go back to your bike shop? Because we make everything that we're doing right now, all our success, everything that we're going to continue to grow on, is going to be our services and coaching and bike fitting. We do some camps and things like that. And who knows? Maybe we become a really cool coffee shop and we make $1 million selling coffee. I don't know. But we're just going to get people to visit with us and see us and experience us without even having to do a bike fit or coaching. So they can buy coffee.
It's so neat to hear about, again, the early beginnings, the midpoint, the growth, where you're headed now. I'm wondering, and maybe the listeners might be wondering, like, what's one thing, like this last decade of coaching, what's one thing that you take away that you've really learned and maybe integrate into coaching now?
Yeah, I would say the thing that I've learned is to be more personable with people. You know, in endurance sports, it's easy just to write programs and shuffle it along. And I'm not saying I don't do that. There are some weeks where, like, I just don't have it in me to be personal, but I don't fake it. So in the past, maybe I faked it or whatever. But to make it as personable as it possibly can be, even though it's just programs on paper. But because, it's a bike, it's running, there's a little skill involved, but it's a sport where I can't run with everybody. I'm not definitely not swimming with everybody. And I even though I could bike a lot, I can't bike with everybody. Sure. So it's really being able to give that. I'm like a coach in a wrestling room to each athlete. I'm there. Like they know, hey, coach is here watching. And so I think I've learned a little bit through technology, and that's what people want. No one wants, no offense to train a road and everything, but no one wants to look at a stupid screen with blue lines, right? Like, they want to know that, is someone watching, and am I getting the tips that I need or the feedback I need to get the results I want? Because, and things like train a road and all, it's great because you learn how to train, and it builds, it actually complements my business, because then we're different. Like, we're definitely different because, again, I'm watching over you. So.
Okay, so you've got a little one at home, Riley. Next 10, 20 years, where do you see AeroPro and you?
So it's a good question. So I still race, and I like racing, and I think that, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years, maybe I may not race as much, or I may not race at all. I may just, you know, I'll still ride my bike and do things. But, you know, I have my daughter growing up, and I have a younger one that's 2.5, and I have an older one, and I want to make sure that I'm spending my time with them, and that my focus is on coaching them as a parent, and coaching them in a constructive way. Like, you know, one thing that we want to do is let my daughter experience lots of different things, like dance and, you know, and sport and whatever, and then whatever she gravitates towards, like teach her good overall concepts. Like, I could care less if she never wins. I could care less if she never goes to college. I know we were talking about a little bit about, you know, kids growing up and going to school and all that, but I just want her to have a good, healthy relationship with sport and life, and to do what I do. Like don't look back on with regret. Like, I'm just doing it. Like, I'm like, you know, I'm making calculative risk, right? Like, I'm not just doing it to, like, hey, I'm going to go and leave my family and go on a voyage. No, I'm making calculative risk, with all of the information. And then I'm not just accepting status quo. Like, I'm not just going, hey, AeroPro is just going to continue on. Like, I could continue on today, coaching 30 athletes, doing my bike fitting, and not expand. And I would live a happy life, and I would make, you know, decent amount of money. But I'm like, that's not enough. Like, I want to keep pushing, and I want my daughters to do that. I want them to keep pushing and striving to be better, right? And to do better, bigger things within what they want to do. I don't want them to have self-imposed limiters. You know, I can't do that because of this, or I can't do that because of that. And that's what I see as teaching them. Like, I want to show them that. And that's what I'm showing them by doing this. Like, me doing this is showing my daughters. Because, like, we can tell them, but if I tell them what to do versus showing what to do, I like to be the example. And I think, you know, through my athletes, they see me working and my example, and I want to show that to my daughters and all that. And I see AeroPro, to be honest with you, I see this new AeroPro 2.0 blowing up, like being bigger than I could ever thought it would be, hiring, you know, some more people, and really making it something that's going to be pretty awesome. And people who didn't know me will know me, like, because a lot of people are like, oh, that, you know, guy's an asshole, or that guy, you know, he just wants to win, or he just coaches fast guys, but I coach just as many beginners, or, you know, maybe sometimes on a ride I may come across differently than I am in person. But I think this place will kind of, I think this will be like the reason why all of this happened for, you know, probably my life, you know, the beginning of my life, why I became a coach, why I coached the kids. You know, I know, I just see everything. I tested through my coaching thing, I've tested out a lot of different things, a lot of different concepts, a lot of, and I was like weeding everything out that would work, and now we're putting it all into this one big place. And if it works, great. I think it will. And if it doesn't, well, in 10 years, I'll still be coaching, just won't, it'll be a smaller degree. So.
Well, just noticing time, maybe this is a good time to begin to wrap it up. Coach Roy Foley, AeroPro Coaching, thank you so much for your time. And I hope, I know I learned a lot about you, and I hope the listeners out there did too. Thank you.
Thanks, Val. I really appreciate you doing this. And it's really been fun. It's funny, I met Val a couple years ago, and a bike shop referred her to me. I've been very fortunate. I remember our first conversations on the phone, and it was a very personal conversation between her and I. And then we just struck it off as really well. And then we spent some time coaching, and she's had some great success. And it's really been an honor. I don't normally have an athlete interview me. And actually, most of my podcasts have not been interviews. It's just been me rambling. So I think the last one that we had an interview was with Dr. Val here. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun coaching you and working with you. So I appreciate it. Hope you guys enjoy this episode and learned a little bit. If you guys, as always, if you have any questions, comments, complaints, hit us up at AeroPro Coaching. And I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Val.
Thank you.